He rolled up against Ekstra, who'd seemed on the verge of collapse moments earlier. The Dutch captain kicked him with a heavy boot, and pain exploded in his head. Dijkstra drew back for another kick, and Carvalho couldn't so much as lift his arms to shield his face. But the blow never came. The two attackers left him on the floor, entered the pressure lock, and forced the other door open. Air rushed past. Dijkstra and Magot disappeared down the corridor toward the away pods. Carvalho struggled to his knees. His head was clearing, and what was left was terror. The pressure cell was open on one side, breached on the other. The bomb-proof shielding the pods had been destroyed, and now air came rushing past, sucked into the vacuum. Blackbeard's oxygen plant was damaged, and if he didn't stop the breach at once, the whole crew might suffocate. The only hope was the airlock. It was ahead of him, the doors open, the light on top still blinking yellow, saying his repair hadn't worked, that the doors wouldn't close. His efforts, far from preserving the ability to reach the pods, had left the engineering bay exposed to the vacuum. Carvalho reached for his computer. The rushing air tried to suck it out of his hand.
"Carvalho!"
a voice shouted in his ear. It was Cap.
"What the devil are you doing down there? We've got a bloody airlock breach, is what it's saying."
He didn't answer. Fingers shaking, he thumbed across the screen, looking for the manual override. A voice was shouting over Cap to put Carvalho on the general channel, and then chatter exploded in his ear. People shouting about incoming ships, others crying out about the breach. Captain Tolvern herself shouting above the chatter, demanding answers for the breach. Behind it all, Carvalho heard Jane's cool computer voice make an announcement.
"Pod 4 launched. Unauthorized trajectory. Unknown destination."
Carvalho found the screen. He touched the big blue button and looked desperately past the breach pressure cell at the airlock doors. They hesitated, as if stuck in their course, then eased shut. The light above the door flashed yellow 3 times, then blue. Then it went out altogether. He sank down to the floor, chest heaving, exhausted and overcome with relief. Chatter continued in his ear. Fear and worry over the breach gave way to panic over the enemy ships swooping toward them. It would seem that the danger had only just begun. Chapter 3 Captain Tolvern thought she might have to physically hold her first mate in her seat. Cap was in a panic and kept calling down to the engineering bay, trying to reach Carvalho. Something had happened down there, and air was rushing out through a breach in the away pods and jetting into space through the gaps opened by the destroyed bomb-proofs. Carvalho wasn't answering. Most likely he'd been sucked into the void. He'd been trying to repair a broken airlock door, and it must have suffered a catastrophic failure. He'd lost his pressure cell, the doors had blown off, and gases had vented explosively into the void. One of the away pods had even broken free in the catastrophe, as Jane had helpfully advised. The ship was in danger if they couldn't get the breach sealed. Meanwhile, 2 hunter-killer packs had broken off from the main attack and were coming at Blackbeard. The rest of the enemy ships swarmed toward Sentinel-3. The battle station had yet to fire its weapons, but it would see action first. The gray-green surface of the third and largest moon of the gas giant stretched below them, visible through the left half of the viewscreen. It was as large as a small planet, with 1/5 standard gravity, and a skin of ice stretched taut over the surface. Long dark streaks tattooed the ice where plumes of liquid had blasted through the crust from underlying volcanic activity, and then landed atop the permanent pack. Blackbeard hugged the moon, only a few tens of miles above the surface. Apex ships struggled inside gravity wells, which seemed to disrupt their ability to spontaneously jump. Tolvern would have rather gone into the atmosphere of the kettle itself, but in their current condition, the buffeting hurricane force winds would tear them apart.
"Carvalho!"
Cap yelled into her comm.
"Answer me, please!"
"Hold it together," Tolvern said. "Do your duty."
For a moment, it looked like Cap would break. Her left hand, immobilized in its cast, clenched and unclenched, and the other gripped the armrest as if she'd tear it off. Straining muscles made the lines on her right forearm bulge. She managed a curt nod and turned back to her console. where she gave an order to the pilot. Her voice was strained but under control. Relieved, Tolvern turned to her tech officer.
Smythe, I need that breach sealed. Barker's going to cut off the whole engineering bay. He's running someone down with... Oh, hold on.
Smythe sagged back in his chair and let out an explosive sigh.
That's closed now. The airlock doors swung shut.
Almost instantly, Smythe was back over his console, working furiously with his adjutant to deal with other threats. Tolvern spared a glance at the viewscreen to see what the enemy was doing.
Carvalho, can you hear me?
Yes, Captain, I am here.
He sounded exhausted but uninjured. Cap whipped her head up and let out a string of barely comprehensible oaths, a Yorktown-style message of endearment for her lover.
I could not stop them, Carvalho said, but they cannot be far. You should knock those pendejos out of the sky before they get away.
What?
It has rocket assist, but it cannot have gone far, not yet.
What the devil are you babbling about, Carvalho?
Megat and the Extra, those bastards! They attacked me and stole an away pod!
A quick glance confirmed that Megat was no longer confined in the detention block. Dijkstra must have let him out, but why? Tolvern had been suspicious of the Dutch pilot and his implausible story, but he had led them to the Singaporean battle station. Why would he help the captured mutineer? The pair had never met, so far as she knew. Now it would seem that the two cowards had rushed to the pods to blast away from the doomed Albion warship in advance of the battle. Wouldn't do them any good. Maybe they'd escape Apex's brutality, but then what? Pod 4 had its own rockets, but those wouldn't carry them far. Down to the icy moon, she supposed. Tolvern ended the call to Carvalho and turned to Cap.
Ignore the pod. If we shoot it down, the buzzards will figure out we've got problems on board.
Nevertheless, the tech officer soon found the wayward pod, which was shooting toward the icy moon, and brought it up on the screen. A pair of long, slender lances broke away from the attack formation to investigate. Whatever Dijkstra and Megat thought they'd earn by making a run for it, this wasn't it. Rather than escaping Apex, they'd be the first to fall into the aliens' clutches. The other six lances, together with a pair of the bulkier spears, kept moving toward Blackbeard. Tolvern ordered Blackbeard to swing around the planet, still accelerating, and she fired off a trio of missiles that raced toward the enemy. The lances made short work of the incoming missiles with lasers, but it delayed pursuit. There was no hope of outrunning the enemy, being down to an engine, but that didn't mean Blackbeard was unable to maneuver. Tolvern's plan was to swing around the moon, then make a run back toward Sentinel-3. By then, the battle station would be in combat, and she hoped to slip in among the incoming and outgoing fire. She could fight in support of the station, looking for opportunities to inflict damage. Two of the lances swooped toward the moon and fell in behind Blackbeard. One of them probed at her engines with energy pulses, but Tolvern had reinforced the rear armor, and the shields absorbed most of the damage. The enemy continued to close.
Launch the Hunter Twos!
Moments later, the heavier, more maneuverable torpedoes thundered out of the tubes. The range was close enough that they forced the enemy craft to evade. The rest of the hunter-killer pack, two lances and a spear, darted in at an angle. Tolvern had anticipated this and was ready with a response. Nib Pim, her room pilot, had a maneuver pre-programmed. The ship rolled and exposed the main battery, and the three ships scattered. At this range, cannon fire would tear them apart. Unfortunately, it would also leave the weakened side of Blackbeard exposed, so she didn't order them to fire. Instead, the cruiser hurtled around the moon and launched itself in the direction of the Singaporean battle station. The station had vanished from the screen. Blackbeard had been docked at Sentinel-3 only a few hours before. During a few tumultuous days, they'd fought off a boarding party, seized the station command module, and joined with the base commander, John Lee, in battling mutineers who'd tried to suffocate the newcomers rather than allow their base to be discovered. And now she saw how Sentinel-3 had successfully remained hidden for 11 long years. Whatever cloaking technology the Singaporeans had, it was masterful. Tolvern knew where Sentinel-3 was. The battle station had shared its exact course. But nothing showed up on the scans, even though the range was short enough that even passive scans could have read the date on a 2-shilling coin. Nothing on any spectrum. only a thin film of reflective ice, forming the gas giant's rings. Tolvern wasn't about to hit the Singaporeans with active scans and reveal them to the enemy. Apex's strength was intercepting communications. Its weakness was detection of the silent and wary. Still, the enemy knew the battle station's rough location. Three of the hunter-killer packs came in at different angles, probing along the ice field. Two more packs wandered the perimeter, clearly uncertain whether the station could move on its own power. It could. And if it had tried to flee, it had not. The rest of the massive enemy fleet lurked outside the orbit of the Kettle's farthest moon, among them the hulking, menacing shape of the harvester ship. Tolvern caught a glimpse into the alien mind as she watched the maneuver. Growing up on the edge of the Drake estate, she had once thought of the Hroom as strange, inscrutable. There weren't Hroom slaves on the farms of her home island of Auckland, but sometimes in town she would see their long, slender bodies sliding down the street in front of their masters. Once one had turned to look at her with his enormous dark eyes, and she'd held her breath until he looked away. But her childish impression was wrong. She now knew the Hroom, and Albion itself had generations of experience with both the aliens and with their weakened but still formidable empire. A Hroom felt fear, love, hatred. You could sit and converse with one, and only rarely did you reach a point where no communication or understanding was possible. The bird-like Apex, on the other hand, were truly alien in thought, culture, and behavior. Even their species was divided into a higher breeding caste, the so-called queens and princesses, and a vast group of drones, workers, warriors, engineers, pilots, and so on. They existed for one purpose, to consume and exterminate other intelligent races. Beyond that, nobody knew anything. Did they have a home planet? A supreme leader? Why were queens and drones so genetically manipulated as to appear almost a separate species? How had they begun their brutal struggle in the first place? But at this exact moment, Tolvern saw directly into their motives, could read them as if she were studying a pack of intelligent wolves that had run down a sick animal on the steppes of northern Albion. The Apex fleet had its prey cornered and desperate. Plenty of time to complete the kill. The only risk was letting it escape. You only think you understand. If they are truly alien, you know nothing. Pilot, Tolvern told Nib Pym, carry us along the Z-axis.
Yes, Captain.
Aided by the deceptive exposure of the main battery and the still wandering torpedoes, Blackbeard had gained distance from the pursuing ships. As Nib Pym set the new course, Tolvern picked a spot near the hidden station, but not on top of it, and ordered the Hroom to take them there. Three of the pursuing lances vanished from the screen, only to reappear directly in front of Blackbeard's path. They swung wide, positioning themselves so all three ships could fire on Blackbeard at once. Moments later, the spear jumped in too. It took its spot above the other three, rolling over to expose a heavy pulse cannon that could fire from several spots along its spine.
Evasive maneuvers?
Nib Pym asked. Tolvern hesitated. Flying right into that formation would be deadly, even if the fire hit Blackbeard along her reinforced deck shields. Tolvern's plan had been a bluff to force the lances to charge in behind while she swept past Sentinel Three's hidden position. If Lee's forces opened up with their armaments, a good fraction of the Apex warships would be annihilated before the rest of them could respond. But at this point, she'd never reach the station. Another hunter-killer pack jumped into place right in front of the first. Dismayed, Tolvern thought that this was an escalation of the firepower arrayed against her, but the positioning was odd. Why jump in front? Why not above or below to double the strength positioned against the Albion warship? Or even jump in along the flanks to herd Blackbeard toward the waiting enemies?
What do we do, Captain?
Cap asked desperately.
Forward guns!
Tolvern cried. No evasive maneuvers. Take us right at them. There was a lot of hard swallowing at this, but no argument as everyone moved to execute the captain's orders. The gunnery fired missiles and torpedoes as a side dish to the cannon fire. Countermeasures spewed out the back of the ship. Clumps of 50 or 100 tiny bomblets dropped behind, like a fleeing octopus squirting ink. More lances had given chase and now fought through this impromptu minefield. The enemy ahead opened fire. The bridge shuddered. The computer chimed in helpfully to warn of shield damage. There wasn't much leeway for the battered, patched-up Navy cruiser, and the alarming numbers Jane shared sounded like damage reports from the end of a battle, not its beginning. Blackbeard swung down at the last minute, like a diving whale. She rolled as she did, and let off a blast from the main batteries, followed by a pair of missiles. It was such an obvious evasive maneuver that the enemy should have no problems avoiding all of the cannon fire, as well as immediately giving pursuit. Instead, the lances scattered. One group ducked away, and the other took the brunt of Blackbeard's broadside. Cannon fire tore one of them in two, and another took a blow to the engines and limped away, pursued by one of the missiles, which locked onto its heat signature. A cheer went up from the bridge as Blackbeard slipped through the net. They'd bought a few more minutes, that was all, and the enemy was already recovering as Tolvern ordered them to swing around and approach the hidden battle station from another angle.
"How did you do that?" Smythe asked from the tech console. "That was a maneuver worthy of James Drake, only I never thought it would work."
"There's something wrong with their fleet," she said. "They're in disarray."
Cap stared at her.
"Yes, but how did you know?"
The first mate sounded even more awed than Smythe.
"It takes a flawed command structure to recognize one. We had to fight mutineers and seize control of Commander Lee's battle station just to get our ship repaired. He's so well hidden that I'll bet there are people on Sentinel 3 even now who are trying to persuade him to let us dangle in the wind and fight Apex on our own.
Not to mention the away pod that squirted free just as Blackbeard was going into battle. By now, Apex would have captured the pod. Megat and Dijkstra were either dead or wishing they were dead. Understanding dawned on a few faces, but the Hroom were literal-minded, and Nib Pim looked up from the nav computer to study her.
"I still do not understand, Captain."
"That second pack jumped in badly," Tolvern said. "Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe they never meant to come in so close, but then they didn't get out of the way. Instead, it looked like they were trying to fight us first. Steal the glory in what looked like an easy battle. We took advantage of their disarray."
Cap pointed at the viewscreen.
"Well, that's fine, but what are we going to do about that?"
The lances were accelerating, and it looked like they were going to jump again. Tolvern's maneuver had carried Blackbeard far away from the planet's icy ring and the battle station's powerful guns. Tolvern needed to buy a few more minutes. She could change direction, but Apex proved adept at anticipating course corrections, and might very well jump in front of her again.
"Do you have that randomized evasive maneuver?" she asked Nib Pim. "Execute it now."
This produced a zigzag pattern that took them twice to starboard, three times up, and once to port. More enemy ships came cruising in from the far orbital position they'd taken around the gas giant. For the moment, Blackbeard was leading them on a merry chase, but the net was closing in again. Tolvern fainted toward the kettle, briefly considered risking a dive into the gas giant's atmosphere, then spotted a gap back toward the ring. Nib Pim confirmed with the nav computer that they could reach the last known position of the Sentinel battle station before they were caught. He'd better be right. Half the enemy fleet was closing fast, now approaching from all sides. Three hunter-killer packs looked ready to jump in for closer combat.
"Okay, Lee,"
Tolvern said, as Blackbeard attempted to repeat its run up along the inside of the planet's icy ring.
"Let's see what you've got."
Commander Lee had taken her on a tour of the battle station before her departure to show her his weapon systems. Chief among them was the Eliminon battery. It had seemed so simple that Tolvern had almost laughed it off. Technologically, it was a marvel, true, but how would it possibly work as a weapon of war? The other armaments were more impressive at first glance, especially the plasma ejector. She'd already seen the ejector in action and was itching to get her hands on it, so she could carry it back to the Admiralty. But the more she thought about the Eliminon battery, the more genius it seemed. Expose the enemy's weakness and hammer it. Blackbeard would be caught as well. But Lee assured her the humans would survive. What about whom would they survive to? Sure, Lee had said, of course they would. Well, probably. Tolvern cast a glance at Nib Pim. She'd explained the risks to him, asked him to pass them along to the other three crewmen in the crew. The pilot did not seem overly concerned. Compared to the rather obvious risk of having your warship explode under enemy fire, or having giant birds peck out your guts with their beaks, the hypothetical risk of the Illuminon battery was easy to handle.
"We're coming along the inside of the ring now,"
Nib Pim said. "Take us past the station. Smythe, turn on the active sensors when we cross its path. I want confirmation our friends are still there."
"We'll have to bring them online now," Smythe said. "If the buzzards see us looking, they'll know we don't dare communicate directly with the station."
"This calls for some deception," she said. "Scan the system. Make it look like we're searching for those supposed reinforcements. We can take a peek at Singapore while we're at it."
"Aye, that's a good idea."
A few seconds passed. Then Smythe exclaimed,
"Captain, it's real! They're really here!"
Smythe's scans had turned up something else. There on the view screen was Blackbeard's salvation. Chapter 4 Tolvern's first emotion was elation. Smythe's scan had revealed a Royal Navy task force. More than that, had the firepower of the fleet. The battleship Dreadnought and an escort of 4 heavy cruisers, 9 torpedo boats, and a dozen corvettes, missile frigates, and destroyers. "Drake, you crafty bastard. You were coming all along." It was that subspace message he'd sent. She'd misread it, thought he was trying to fool Apex into thinking he was on his way with reinforcements. But it was a mind game on top of a mind game, and it had fooled Tolvern too. "Bring up a map of the system," she ordered. Smythe obeyed, and her hopes deflated. His mouth formed a thin line.
37 hours, sir."
37? Her voice sounded hollow in her ears. Dreadnought alone might have turned the battle. Tolvern had gone up against the monstrous ship in the 3rd Battle of Barca. Even when the fight had turned against the enemy, Dreadnought had seemed invincible, taking blow after blow. Her guns blasted ships out of the sky and were on the verge of annihilating Blackbeard as well, when Drake's old friend and confidant, Captain Rutherford, rammed his ship into Dreadnought's upper decks. There was nothing left of Rutherford or his cruiser after he hit, but the blow had disabled the battleship and allowed it to be captured. Tolvern was sure the arriving fleet, coupled with Drake's brilliant mind, would help her fight off Apex and deliver a blow that would make the aliens think twice about attacking Albion again. If only Drake's forces weren't 37 hours from the action. The view screen shifted. "Here's Sentinel-3, Smythe said. The battle station was a black smear against the icy ring that curved up and away from them. They were within the protective range of its guns already.
"Bring us about," Tolvern ordered. "It's our turn to deliver the pain."
She braced herself as the ship made a violent maneuver. Time to find out if Barker's repairs would hold, or if they'd be smeared like bloody jam against the far wall. The ship shuddered as Cap and Nib Pim hooked them back around, but held. Blackbeard sliced through the icy ring. Broad, but extremely thin, the ring buffeted the hull with ice particles. The ship shuddered again. That was the engine reversing thrust, not the ice. And swung wide to present her main guns. Lances sliced toward them, their energy weapons pulsing fire. Tolvern called the gunnery.
"Give the buzzards a broadside."
50 tons of hot metal exploded into space. Missiles chased after the cannon fire, and slower but deadly Hunter 2s followed behind. The leading 2 lances jumped away as if they'd been expecting this. Another performed evasive maneuvers but took hits along its flank. It fled the battlefield, chased relentlessly by one of the torpedoes. That still left roughly a dozen enemy ships targeting them. They came in from every side, and the ship began to take damage. Blackbeard returned fire, letting loose with everything she had, as if it were a cornered animal ready to fight to the death. She couldn't stand and slug it out. Only moments now, and it would be over. Sentinel-3 appeared. There was no warming up, no experimental salvo from the battle station. It hurtled masses of missiles and bombs, and the plasma ejector fired thousands of green globules. Lances and spears fled this way and that to flee the attack. The globules caught one of the lances, affixed to the skin, and expanded to engulf the enemy. The enemy ship exploded in a fiery death. Another took bomb damage and raced in a straight line away from the battle, seemingly unable to change course. The other lances jumped. One moment, Blackbeard was about to be overwhelmed by the energy weapons tearing at its damaged shields, and the next, it was pulling in next to the Singaporean battle station, largely unharmed. The enemy ships reappeared a few million miles away.
"That'll show 'em," Cap said grimly. "Mess with us and they'll get a bloody nose. Come back for more and we'll settle that ash for good."
There was more bluster than reality in the first mate's words. They all knew the grim reality of the situation. At first glance, it seemed that they'd won a quick and satisfying victory, held their ground, and driven away the enemy. Blackbeard had destroyed an enemy ship, and the battle station had destroyed a second. Three others had taken significant damage. Against this, Blackbeard's shields had taken a few hits, but they'd also bought time to continue their essential repairs. Unfortunately, that still left the bulk of the enemy's 56-ship fleet intact. Among them was the Harvester ship, which had yet to engage. The battle station had been revealed and could not easily hide itself again, and Blackbeard was still unable to withstand a single sustained assault with her weakened shields. There was one other small victory gained, Tolvern realized, as she studied the looming enemy fleet regrouping beyond the Kettle's outer moons. The enemy ranks were not unified. It was once again evident in the jostling. They seemed to be forming two ranks, one organized behind the Harvester ship. This force numbered about 40 ships in all, and a second smaller force comprising three of the hunter-killer packs.
"They're starting to move," Smythe said. "Not in this direction, though."
"Gathering speed, that's all," Tolvern said. "They'll jump right in now that they know we're stuck to the Sentinel's guns."
She got on the comm to the gunnery.
"You're catching all this?" she asked.
"Aye, Captain," Barker said. "All batteries loaded and ready to go. If they jump, we'll be ready for them."
"What about torpedoes and missiles? Are they holding up?"
"Missiles are fine. No shortage there. We've got one more volley with the 102s, and then we'll be down to the older models. But the way I figure, there's no sense in saving them for tomorrow, eh?"
"Actually, I want you to hold on to the 102s. Don't waste the good stuff. I need it for the next engagement."
Barker grunted.
"We don't shoot everything we've got. There won't be a next engagement."
"It's time for our friends to show their hand."
"The Eliminon battery?" he asked.
"Right. After that, we'll break out the 102s, but not before."
"Understood. Well, let's pray the damn thing works. If not, these torpedoes will never make it out of the tubes."
"Stay on your toes. Expect surprises."
She ended the call, turned to Cap, and told the first mate to pass the message throughout the ship. "Brace for the Eliminon battery." Tolvern glanced at the screen. The enemy ships were ready to jump back into the attack. Only moments now. If she was right, they'd arrive en masse. The crew on the bridge stayed busy. Cap, speaking with engineering about power requirements for the engines and the lasers. Lomelee, hard at work on the defense grid computer, working on countermeasures. Nib Pym calculating where the enemy would appear, and Smythe running scans.
"Lomelee," Tolvern said. "Tell Lee we're ready."
"Yes, sir."
Before Blackbeard had pulled away from the battle station, Tolvern and Lee had worked out a few simple signals. They had to assume Apex could intercept any communications and couldn't risk sending direct transmissions, but the warship captain and the base commander needed a way to pass information. A series of one-time-only messages. Lomelee sent one of these messages now, starting with chaff fired from the rear. It flashed on Tolvern's console, looking like hundreds of small bombs or exploding pieces of debris designed to thwart enemy ordnance. Exactly 4.5 seconds later, Lomelee launched chaff from the bow. To the enemy, it would look like Blackbeard was expecting an immediate attack, which she was. But the reason and timing of the chaff meant something else. A signal to Lee to fire up the Eliminon battery.
"Smythe," Tolvern said, "bring down the gravity."
He hit a button, and suddenly they were all floating. Belatedly, she grabbed for the restraints and got herself clamped in. The others had strapped themselves down already. Normally, the loss of artificial gravity was serious business. It not only kept you walking around in one gravity, as your planet-adapted body demanded, but the artificial gravity coordinated with the inertia engine to keep you from splattering against the wall or ceiling every time the ship pulled a violent maneuver. Blackbeard had come to a complete halt a few hundred miles from the Sentinel battle station. It was a sitting duck, as the old saying had it, but sitting still was the only thing that would keep them alive once the Eliminon battery fired up. Assuming the thing even works. Who really knew? It might fail to operate at all, for one thing. Even Lee admitted that Sentinel 3 had never used it in battle. And if it had been used by one of the other Sentinels, for example, Apex might have since designed ways to defeat it. The first two hunter-killer packs jumped, and three more packs jumped moments later. 25 Apex ships in all. That was the entirety of the smaller force Tolvern had identified earlier. No ships from the larger force had jumped. Interesting. The bridge was quiet as they waited for the ships to reappear. Tolvern's arms floated above her armrests, and she had the sudden impression that she was upside down, that the entire universe had flipped over, that all her life she'd been walking on the ceiling and looking up at the floor. The enemy ships reappeared, clusters of lances to port, starboard, below, and above, and the heavier spears closing in from the front and rear. Blackbeard fired her main guns. She rolled, and people on the bridge cried out as they were spun around like clothes in a dryer. She fired again. Weapons discharged in all directions. Everything except torpedoes. Those were held in reserve. Tolvern felt lightheaded as the ship settled, and now she felt improbably that she was lying on her side, that the universe had shifted sideways.
"Come on, Lee!"
she shouted in frustration as enemy fire laid into them. Blackbeard was shuddering, emergency lights flashing all over the place. Jane warned ominously of failing systems and dying shields. Where the devil was that Eliminon battery? Lee had to have seen the signal. It was too obvious, and it was exactly what they discussed. A burst of chaff, a pause of exactly 4.5 seconds, and then another burst. He'd warned her to have the artificial gravity turned off. But nothing had happened. It must have failed. And then a giant fist slammed her into her seat. Where moments later she'd been thrown against the restraints as the ship turned to position its weapons, now she was shoved down. Her limbs were led, and it felt as though a man was sitting on her shoulders, another man on her legs, and two more on her chest. Every breath was labored, as if a giant vice had caught her lungs and were relentlessly tightening. Men and women across the bridge slumped in their chairs and across their consoles. Nib Pim gave a high moan and struggled to hold up his head, which seemed too heavy for his neck to support. It was the Eliminon battery. Tolvern had been skeptical when Commander Lee explained how it worked. Capturing gravitational waves emitted by the gas giant, it channeled them into a sphere surrounding the battle station. Anything within that sphere would be caught in the crushing grip of 6 Gs. If you already had your ship calibrated to match Albion's 0.98G surface, you could make it 7. There was no skepticism now. Tolvern felt every pound of additional pressure on her body. Her pulse thudded in her temples, which felt like they would split and let her brains ooze out. When she turned, it felt like her head would snap off and fall to the floor. She looked at the viewscreen. Sentinel 3's ultimate weapon had caught the Apex ships in a crushing embrace. Those farther out were still maneuvering, but the ones closer in were either held in place or hurtling on whatever trajectory they'd been following before the battle station fired up its weapon.
"Captain!"
Cap said. Blood trickled from one nostril and her mouth hung open.
"Order fire?"
"Yes."
Somehow, Tolvern activated the comm.
"Barker, give 'em hell!"
The phrase ultimate weapon wasn't just hyperbole. Bringing the Eliminon battery online brought down the station's ability to fire other weapons. The battle station was within a protective shell that shielded its inhabitants. But anything outside was affected by the gravitational waves, which spread equally across the affected region. Until it turned off the weapon, it fell on Blackbeard to do any fighting. 8 Hunter 2 torpedoes squirted out of the tubes. Rockets firing, they struggled to overcome the gravitational waves and accelerated slowly. Each torpedo targeted a single ship. Three were unable to overtake the ships they were chasing, and Tolvern saw at once that the lances would slip out of the gravity cone and escape. A fourth torpedo slammed into the side of a lance, but the explosive was a dud and only partially detonated. The lance was wounded but not destroyed. The other four torpedoes, however, found their mark. One exploded inside the engines of a lance and left nothing but microscopic wreckage. Two more struck disabling blows that sent lances spinning, crippled from the battlefield. The final torpedo struck a lance along the stern and broke it in two, like a banana cut down the middle. These larger pieces flew apart an instant later. The alien ship had been flying directly at Blackbeard when the torpedo struck it, and bits of debris struck them. Tolvern kept the presence of mind to take a quick look, hoping to snare an engine or undamaged weapon. No engine, but she caught a glimpse of shattered bodies and torn-off wings. Apex would have approved of the carnage. Tolvern had destroyed four enemy ships in an instant, and cursed her luck. They could have wiped out a third of the attack wave with a single volley. Instead, fully half of her torpedoes had failed to damage easy targets. It took a moment for her sluggish mind to recognize that an opportunity still presented itself. More than a dozen enemy ships remained within the sphere cast by the Eliminon battery. All were dead still, having jumped into place and never regained momentum. One of these was a command ship, a so-called spear, which lay straight ahead. Not one of them had recovered. Why weren't they moving? Yes, they had to cope with their own artificial gravity, on top of the bone-crushing amounts radiating out from the Sentinel battle station, but surely someone would have the presence of mind to put the foot, or rather talon, on the gas and accelerate in a straight line to get them out of the way. A thought came unbidden. They're birds. The wheels were still turning, creaking from one thought to the next, and Tolvern slowly worked it out. Feathers, claws, as tall as an ostrich, but with beaks that her science officer said could manipulate objects, much like a parrot's, and wings. Those wings were capable of flight, not racing around like a pigeon or a hawk, but short turkey-like bursts. The Apex homeworld must be lower gravity than Earth or Albion or the typical homeworld, if such a large animal could fly. What did they have their artificial gravity set to? Maybe it was only 0.5G. What felt like a crushing weight to humans, crippling to a Hroom, might even kill the buzzards. All these ships might be filled with dead enemies. She could capture one intact, learn all their secrets. Tolvern's head was pounding, and she couldn't get excited about the idea while she was trying to remain conscious, though she recognized what a critical breakthrough that would present. But before she could work out a strategy for seizing one of the ships, the spear ahead of them began to move slowly. Someone was still alive on board. "Take it out," she ordered. Cap passed the orders to the gunnery, while Tolvern tried to get Nib Pym alert enough to interface with the nav computer. He moved sluggishly, but complied. Blackbeard eased into motion. The inertia engine was off, and movement that was too aggressive would kill them. Even the modest acceleration Nib Pym ordered was enough additional strain that spots flashed in Tolvern's vision. Lomelie threw up over the defense grid computer, and Smythe had to go help her. They came up behind the spear and let loose with the deck gun. The larger enemy ship had stronger shields to go along with more powerful weaponry, and didn't immediately yield to the kinetic fire pouring out of Blackbeard. Tolvern waited until the rear shield lay battered and fractured into pieces, then hit it with a laser. The shield absorbed some of the energy, but was soon melting off like hot cheese. One more hit with the deck gun, and the spear blew apart. Blackbeard swung toward another enemy ship, a lance. It didn't move, and Tolvern let loose with the main cannons. A single broadside tore gaping holes all along the ship, and it broke into numerous pieces. The next opportunity came seconds later, as a lance flashed by off port. It had just entered the gravitational sphere when the battle station activated the Eliminon battery, and hadn't altered its course since then. Blackbeard hit it with cannon fire. When it emerged from the far side of the sphere, It was still racing toward the kettle. Its engine sputtered, trying to move, but Blackbeard had raked it over. It was unable to alter its trajectory, and soon plummeted into the crushing gas atmosphere of the planet. The gunnery loaded fresh missiles and sent a pair toward each of the last two remaining ships. They died without a fight. By now, the others had either drifted outside the gravity sphere around the battle station or managed to limp away. In both cases, they fled for their lives. Throughout this entire struggle, the bulk of the Apex forces had remained at a distance, seemingly content to observe. A Hroom fleet would have charged into the rescue, making an all-or-nothing bid to overwhelm the enemy with firepower. A human fleet might have approached cautiously or aggressively, depending on the commanding officer, but most certainly would have attempted to fight in support of its allies. Apex seemed unconcerned about the heavy losses. In fact, Tolvern was getting the sense that they simply didn't care about death or destruction suffered even by their own side, willing to sacrifice any number of ships for unknown reasons. The crushing gravity vanished. It didn't dissipate. It simply was no longer there. With the artificial gravity off, it was especially disconcerting as Tolvern felt weightless again. Someone vomited loudly, probably Lomeli again. Tolvern's stomach flopped twice, and then was still. The Sentinel battle station started firing again the moment the Illuminon battery turned off. It chased down a fleeing lance with green globules from its plasma ejector, destroying it, and wounded two others with missiles.
"Give me gravity," Tolvern ordered.
The ship's systems kicked back on. She meant to chase the fleeing enemies, but they were already safely away. To go after them now would take her far from the battle station's protective firepower. Instead, she looked warily at the scans, wondering what the enemy would try next. The tattered remnants of the attack wave flew back toward the harvester ship and the rest of the fleet, badly mauled in the struggle. 13 lances destroyed, plus a spear. Several other ships wounded. The enemy force remained formidable, but it no longer looked invincible. It certainly didn't appear to be spoiling for another skirmish. From the cheering on the bridge, you'd have thought the entire war had been won. The defense grid and tech console crews came together to slap hands and clap each other on the back. Cap kissed the solemn Hroom pilot right on the mouth, then grinned at his startled look before coming to try the same with the captain.
"Please," Tolvern said as Cap came in, puckered up. "Let's maintain some dignity, shall we?"
"Ah, you ain't gonna be all stiff like that now that you're in charge, are you?"
Stiff, no. Somewhat formal, yes. Nobody would have planted a sloppy kiss on Captain Drake's mouth, after all. But she couldn't keep the grin off her face. And she certainly didn't feel like a victorious naval captain. She was too giddy with relief.
"Smythe, give me a fresh scan. What is that harvester ship doing?"
"Come on, Captain,"
Cap pressed as Smythe moved to comply.
"I thought we was going to die, and I'll wager you did too. Ain't we allowed a little bit of fun after all that?"
"We are allowed, and we did have some fun. Now let's figure out how to stay alive."
"They can't touch us in here,"
Smythe said, far too confidently.
"That Illuminon battery will drive them off. So we stay here and neutralize any long-range attacks. From this distance, our countermeasures can handle anything they throw at us."
"That's right," Cap said. "They gotta come in here."
She ground a fist into her palm.
"And then we'll pulverize them."
"Our captain does not look so confident,"
Nib Pym said, studying Tolvern's face.
"That's because the Illuminon battery can't protect us anymore," she said.
Cap thrust her chin out defiantly.
"What are you talking about?"
Tolvern held the first mate's gaze.
"It is a single-use weapon."
Chapter 5. Once it became clear that the enemy wouldn't force an immediate resumption of hostilities, Tolvern had left a skeleton crew on the bridge and brought Cap, Smythe, and Nib Pym into the war room. Moments earlier, they'd been cheering, slapping each other on the back, and carrying on like the battle had settled the entire war. Now they stared glumly from around the table as she laid out the facts. The Illuminon battery warped gravitational waves coming off the gas giant, in effect capturing them within a containment field. Releasing them destroyed the containment field, and it had to be rebuilt. When Tolvern first heard of the Illuminon battery, She'd assumed that battery was being used in the ancient naval sense, to mean a collection of guns or cannons. But that was wrong. Battery in this case meant the device's storage capacity.
"So let me get this straight," Smythe said. "The thing literally needs to recharge."
"I haven't got a clue how the physics works," Tolvern said. "But it appears to have that limitation, yes."
"How long are we talking about?"
"A day or two. It's not always consistent, but a long time given the present circumstances."
"That is obviously a problem,"
Nib Pim said.
"Yes, pilot, it is."
"I do not think we have that long."
"No, pilot, I wouldn't say that we do."
"Let me grab Brocket and Lomeli and take a look at this thing," Smythe said. "I'll bet we could figure out a couple of tweaks. Barker, too, he's got a good mind for the engineering stuff. Get it up and running faster, and the battery would be a lot more useful."
"Maybe so," Tolvern said. "But do you think you could do all of that before, oh, I don't know, 48 hours from now? Figure out the science and engineering, and then implement changes to one of the most sophisticated weapon systems ever devised? And do it before the buzzards come flying in for another go of it?"
"Well, no, I guess that would be too much to hope for." Tolvern avoided the exasperated sigh that wanted to come out. Instead, she spoke more practically.
"The good thing is that Apex has no clue either, hopefully. They were certainly caught with their pants down when the device activated."
"Do birds wear pants?" Cap asked. "Seems hard to put them on over those skinny legs. And then there are the claws."
"Damn it, Cap."
"Sorry, Captain, I was just wondering." She brightened. "There's one good thing. We held off that long, and that's about the time Drake and his mates will be showing up, right?"
"More or less."
Cap rubbed her head. "So all we need to do is stay alive for 2 days, and we're saved."
"Yes, merely that."
And yet Cap had a point, didn't she? They'd lost the element of surprise, but if Drake's fleet arrived in time, it would be more than an even match. Apex must see the same thing. They'd be eager to renew the attack just as soon as they regrouped. The key was to keep that attack from happening. An idea began to form, a possible solution to her problem. To implement it, she'd need Commander Lee's help. But the two of them could not communicate from a distance for fear of losing their secrets to the aliens. Tolvern rose to her feet.
"Lieutenant Cap, you have the helm. I need to pay our friends on the battle station a visit."
Soon, Tolvern was alone in the away pod. The diamond-like sheen of the ice ring swept across her field of vision, with the gas giant, a vast kettle of copper and clay, eating up the background. The battle station was only a few dozen miles from the ship, but it had vanished once again against the ring. A yellow light flashed above the airlock door, and Jane began her countdown.
30 seconds to launch. Prepare for rapid acceleration.
Tolvern's thoughts turned to the two men who'd attacked Carvalho and stolen an away pod. Maggot, the escaped Singaporean mutineer, and Dijkstra, the new Dutch pilot who'd led them to this system in the first place. What had they been thinking? How had they even known each other? Carvalho said that Dijkstra was sick when he came down here, sweating and barely able to hold himself up. Was that a coincidence, or did it have something to do with all of this? Tolvern might never find out. Apex had sent a lance to pick up the pod, and the two men were probably dead by now. If not, they wished they were dead. Cap spoke over the comm.
"You remember to pack your toothbrush, Captain?"
"Ha, I won't be long."
"Better not. Them buzzards are moving again, and I ain't fighting them alone."
20 seconds, Jane said.
"An hour, tops," Tolvern said. "Don't leave without me."
"On the other hand, it is a nice ship what you left me. Wonder what it would fetch on San Pablo. 10,000 quid, I figure."
10,000 and a bounty on your head."
"I see your point."
10 seconds to launch.
"Tell you what, Captain, bring me back a handsome bloke from the station and I'll let you keep your ship."
Tolvern didn't respond to this. She had closed her eyes and was finishing the countdown in her head. And then the launch, it slammed her back in her seat as she went hurtling from the ship. She opened her eyes. Ahead, nothing but ice. Above and behind, the vast field of stars, the endless universe. Where was the station? Shouldn't it be visible by now? Had they miscalculated? Or worse, what if the battle station hadn't received her message? She'd sent the signal, 2 timed bursts from the plasma engine, as if testing it after battle. It meant she would send a pod from Blackbeard. Tolvern didn't see the hook or net until it had snared her, and she was pushed against her restraints. The hook brought her in, and suddenly she could see the black smear of the station against the surrounding stars. She had to get her hands on that cloaking technology. Commander John Lee was in the docking bay to personally help her out of the pod. Like everything else on the battle station, the bay was orderly and neat, but the air was warmer than on Blackbeard, more humid. It also carried a faint floral scent. Lee seemed more relaxed than when she'd last seen him, roughly 10 hours earlier, and as she studied his face, she was surprised to see that he seemed rested. "You look like a man who has got a good night's sleep," she said. "Don't tell me you were curled up in bed during the battle." In a manner of speaking, it was artificial sleep, but good enough. "What are you talking about?" "We have a pill that simulates 8 hours of rest. Very useful in combat situations."
"What? That's medically impossible."
Lee laughed. "Except that it's not. Look at me."
"If that's true, I've got to get my hands on it."
"You pay for it later, of course. The pills let you skip up to 2 days of sleep, but you crash hard. You need to make up every hour eventually."
"Oh," Tolvern said, disappointed. "So it's just an upper. That sort of thing has been around forever, since they discovered tea and coffee, if not before."
"No, it's not an upper. You're not jittery, you're not drugged. It really does feel like you've had a good night of sleep."
Tolvern waved her hand. "Never mind, I'm exhausted and would rather be in my bed. But the buzzards are milling about out there. You know they're going to make another charge before the Albion fleet arrives."
"Those are your ships, then, you're sure?"
"Absolutely. The big one is Dreadnought. She's the flagship of the entire fleet. You recall my fight with Apex before jumping into the Kettle system?"
"Right. You lost a warship and came out battered, I recall."
"HMS Swift. We nearly went down, too. I fired off a subspace message, but I never expected reinforcements. I thought Drake's fleet was back guarding the home system."
"So you had no idea he was coming?"
"The Admiral's response led me to believe he was abandoning us to our fate, even though he claimed help was on its way. I thought it was a feint for the enemy. Turns out it was a double feint."
"He sounds like a clever man." Lee's face turned grim. "But they're too far away. They'll never arrive in time."
"We have to buy time. The key is the Eliminon battery."
"I know what you're thinking, Tolvern, but give it up. There's absolutely no way to recharge the weapon in time. In fact, we're not even charging yet. We're still running diagnostics."
"What?"
she asked, alarmed.
"You are?"
"That's the problem with using a weapon for the first time in 11 years. It doesn't quite work as well as it did in drills. I figure we'll lose 2 hours, maybe 3. The point is, we won't get it back online in time for the next attack."
"I know that. And you know that. Does Apex?"
"Hard to say," Lee said. "Let's say no. They certainly didn't act like they were expecting to face the Eliminon battery. They weren't prepared at all. Anyway, it doesn't matter if they know its limitations or not. They have enough firepower in their long-range weapons to stand off a pace and bombard us from a distance. That would be slow, but I'll bet they could finish the job before your friends arrive." "Or," Lee added, "they turn on your admiral first. The Apex fleet is huge. I have no doubt your Albion friends would put up a fight, but the aliens would prevail."
"You haven't seen Dreadnought in action," Tolvern said stubbornly.
"Does it have some special weapon systems? Or is it just a bigger, more powerful version of your own ship?"
"Thicker armor, more guns, more ability to take punishment and deliver it."
"So bigger and more powerful, but essentially the same as Blackbeard." Lee shrugged. His implicit dismissal of her ship rankled. He'd only seen Tolvern's cruiser when it was already battered by the enemy, its armor in tatters. Even so, even helplessly outnumbered, it had delivered a beating to the enemy. True, she'd only survived thanks to Sentinel III's defenses. But that was all the more reason she needed to stay alive until the Admiral arrived.
"Can't this battle station move?" Tolvern said.
His tone was wary. "Why do you ask that?"
"That wasn't a question, not really. Smythe has been in your command module working your systems, and I've seen your schematics myself. You have 6 plasma engines. I would have commandeered one and patched it onto my ship somehow if I'd had the time."
"It's too small for you," Lee said. "I have my own engineers, you know. Co-analyzed your ship. You couldn't have outrun the birds, and you couldn't have attained jump speeds. Not with anything stolen from my station, at least. I'm not here to steal an engine. My point is that you can maneuver. Your engines share a fuel source with the plasma ejector. Turn off the ejector, and you've got enough power to cross the entire system if you need to. Not fast enough to outrun Apex. And once I start moving, I lose my cloaking. So if you're hoping to slip quietly away before the enemy attacks, give that idea up. Tolvern hadn't even considered that possibility. Was Lee sure? What if Blackbeard tucked in against the battle station and they made an attempt to join up with Admiral Drake? The enemy fleet seemed divided, distracted. Apex's ability to detect hidden enemies was weak. It might work. "No, I don't want to hide," she said, dismissing that idea. "And I don't want to make a run for it at all. I'm talking about pressing the attack." Lee's eyes widened. "You want us to move into an offensive posture?" "Sentinel-3 is mobile. It's a powerful spaceship in its own right. Don't wait for the enemy to start a long-range bombardment. Move toward them, as if you have nothing to fear. Blackbeard will assume the role of fire support, stand back a pace and lob missiles onto the battlefield. Keep the enemy dancing. Without the Illuminon battery, we wouldn't stand a chance." "They don't know about the Illuminon battery, though, do they?" she asked. "They don't know you need to recharge it. So we gain some tactical advantages, assuming they buy it. Once they see we can't turn it on and off at will, that goes away. They swoop in en masse and wipe us out." "There's one other factor you may not know about," Tolvern said. "The enemy forces are in disarray. There's internal conflict in their fleet." She explained what she'd noticed in the battle, starting with how not all of the hunter-killer packs were fighting in harmony. The biggest evidence was how one group had jumped in front of the other, preventing an easy victory. One side had seemed cautious, the other aggressive. "It might be nothing more than bad coordination between forces," Tolvern said. "But given the Buzzard's caste system, I'd expect them to fight as one."
"That was certainly the case during our war," Lee said. "At least in any individual encounter. We know the greater commanders and the lesser commanders are jockeying for position within a hierarchy. It must be something like that."
"But what if it's something even more profound?" Tolvern pressed. "Albion just survived a civil war. The Hroom Empire is in the middle of their own. Even on your own ship, you divided into factions and fought a pitched battle, one side against the other."
"Don't try to put yourself in their minds, Captain," Lee said. "They're incomprehensible, except as a force of nature."
"I'm not so sure. Not in this situation. You know what I think? I think it's a natural condition of any intelligent species to fight among themselves, even in the face of an external threat."
"Even if that's true, what good does it do us?" Lee shook his head. "These birds are brutal killers, and the only thing that concerns them is the complete obliteration of a rival. Maybe you can negotiate with the Hroom, but Apex is something else entirely. A deer doesn't negotiate with a wolf, it runs for its life."
"Albion is not a deer, it's a lion, and we're not running from this battle, we're fighting it."
"Understood, that's not what I meant."
"And don't you call this the Dragon Quadrant?" she asked. "Isn't a dragon the symbol of your Imperium? Do dragons flee for their lives?"
Lee's expression hardened. "We're no cowards either, if that's what you mean." Dragon or deer, the Imperium was nearly dead. So far as Tolvern knew, this battle station was the only force of Singaporeans still fighting. The rest of the Imperium fleet was gone, the cities of its home world, radioactive slag heaps. And an Apex harvester ship was collecting the survivors to torture and feed to its troops.
"So you'll take the fight to the enemy?" she asked.
A curt nod. "We'll fight." Although they'd had no trouble catching an inbound pod, the Singaporeans didn't share the Royal Navy's system of firing pods back and forth, so Tolvern had to abandon the capsule that had carried her over, as there was no way to send it back to her ship. Instead, Lee led her down to the launching bay, where she was shown a small ship a Singaporean technician called a scooter. During Sentinel-3's long years of isolation, the crew had apparently used them to fly around the perimeter of the station, conducting inspections of the hull and docking to complete external repairs. In a pinch, Lee sent them to scour raw materials from the surrounding ice, asteroids, and even the nearest of the small moons orbiting the planet. A scooter was capable of round-trip journeys of 20 or 30,000 miles.
The tech pointed out with concern that Tolvern was unlikely to return the scooter, but Lee laughed off the objection. If all we lose today is a scooter, our ancestors will surely have been smiling down on us. Tolvern eased herself into the cockpit of the small craft. She was tucked right in, no room to stretch her legs. The tech leaned over her to point out useful buttons and knobs, and had to get right in her face to show her. Better a scooter than an unpowered pod, launched on a pre-programmed trajectory. Launched to a blind spot in the ice ring, to be more precise, with no guarantee the station was even there. In comparison, a throttle and joystick in hand felt like control, even if she knew it was illusory. If only the instrument panels weren't labeled in Chinese, the screens filled with chicken scratches. Better not overthink it. A simple throttle and joystick, how hard could it be? This way of transportation worked today, Tolvern told Lee. I'm not so sure about the future. Flitting back and forth from a few hundred miles out is one thing, but what would we do if you were on the other side of the kettle and we needed to talk? Either we need better encryption, or we need a shuttle system. What's wrong with the scooter? I don't have a launch platform that can send it out again, unfortunately. Don't you have a self-propelled pod? A few, she said. And sure, I can send them, but you still need a way to send them back. Right now, every trip is a one-way journey. That's going to use up your scooters and my pods in a hurry. Then why did you launch a pod in the middle of battle? I didn't. That was unauthorized. We had a few issues on Blackbeard. Nothing to worry about. The Buzzard saw it, and I'm guessing the pair on board that pod are either dead by now, or wish they were. Tolvern looked up from the cockpit at Lee, who stood with his hands on his hips, staring, suspicion on his face. I thought we were sharing all information. You certainly led me to believe so when I revealed the Illuminon battery. Why are you lying now?
I'm not lying. Tolvern blinked, confused. What do you even think I'm lying about?
Lee turned to the tech. Show her the ship. The other man pulled a computer from his hip pocket and touched the screen. He leaned over and showed Tolvern the screen. It was a small chart of the system. Marked in yellow was the trajectory of a vessel flying away from the kettle. Your pod, Lee said.
Can't be. The pods don't have that kind of range.
We saw your launch and picked this up from the exact region where you sent it.
I don't know what that is, but it's not ours, she said. Must be the Buzzards, one of the Lancers, maybe. It swooped in, captured the pod, and is carrying it off to who knows where.
It's too small for a lance, and we tracked it from where you launched your pod. Who was it, Tolvern? What are you hiding?
I'm not hiding anything. It was your friend Megart, and the Dutch fellow who told us you were here. Dijkstra broke Megart out of his cell, and the two of them attacked and nearly killed one of my crew, then made a run for it in the pod.
And you let them get away? Lee asked.
They weren't going anywhere. I told you there's no range on those pods. It has to be a lance.
Except that it's not. That is no lance or any other Apex ship. It's too small. And it has a plasma engine that is clearly a derivative of your own. Based on the signature, it must be your pod.
I'm telling you that pod is in no way capable of crossing the system. And it doesn't have a plasma engine. Go back to your data. You'll see the pod was rocket launched.
He studied her, and it was obvious that he still harbored doubts. Tolvern was done protesting. Anything more, and she'd start to sound desperate to convince him. Frankly, she didn't care if he believed her or not. She'd been on the base nearly 45 minutes already. She had to get back to Blackbeard.
Whoever that is, she said, they're leaving the battlefield, not arriving. We'll worry about the ones already here and trying to kill us.
All right.
Tolvern gave him a hand computer she'd brought over from the ship. I worked out a few signals on my way over here. There's a list of them here for you to study. I'll give you simple orders, and it will be up to you to find the best way to execute them.
What if I need to say something back?
I didn't have time for that. Maybe when this is over, we can dredge up some old Earth flag signaling or something. Visual range only.
Tolvern buckled herself in and gestured for the tech to lower the canopy.
Time to give your scooter a test drive.
They launched Tolvern on an electrified rail. It shot her away from the station, at which point she fired the ignition. Small rockets flared out from the rear of the scooter, and she fought with the joystick to stabilize. In a few moments, she was racing toward Blackbeard.
Hey, this is fun. Too bad I can't take it out for a run.
She got on the comm.
I'm on my way.
Cap answered, her voice tense. We see you. Approach and we'll bring you in. Cap hesitated, then added, Did you get an update before you left the station? Negative, and I don't want one now, do you understand?
Aye. It ain't pretty, though. I can say that much, right?
Tolvern was itching to find out what her first mate possibly meant. And she was tired, her judgment not at its sharpest. She almost asked. But there was valuable information for the enemy in almost anything they could say, and she refrained. Cap, Tolvern warned.
Enough of that. Anything you need before I close the channel?
Aye, Captain.
The lieutenant's tone was suddenly playful.
I need a handsome blank for a roll in the sack. Did you bring me one?
I wouldn't want to aggravate that collarbone injury.
That's what Carvalho said. I told him not to worry, I'm safe enough. But I had to shag him 3 times before he'd believe it.
Chapter 6 Tolvern had her update the moment they hauled her into the landing bay. Seeing it on the view screen a few minutes later only confirmed the bad news. She settled into her seat and gratefully accepted a mug of hot tea brought to her from the mess, while her exhausted brain tried to make sense of the new information. Blackbeard was no longer trying to hide, and had been scanning the system with all active and passive sensors. Admiral Drake's forces kept their long march toward the kettle in relief of the Albion cruiser and her new friend, but they were still a day and a half from the battlefield. Tolvern might have to fight Apex off, not just once, but multiple times, if she hoped to survive long enough for reinforcements to arrive. Meanwhile, they located the departing ship Commander Lee had told her about. It was human, all right, and what's more, Blackbeard's database identified the type. It was a Dutch tramp frigate, barely large enough to jump. That class of ship had a single deck gun that wouldn't do much in an actual fight, and generally stuck to areas patrolled by the Royal Navy rather than risking pirates in the outer systems. What was it doing way out here? The ship had apparently been hidden somewhere inside the gas giant's orbit. When the battle started, it emerged from hiding and made a run for it. Its motivation baffled her, but she suspected who was flying it, Dijkstra and Magot.
The devil only knows how they got on board, Tolvern said.
Cap let out a burst of rude language when Tolvern shared her suspicions, but when the cursing ran its course, an expression came over her face that managed to be both outraged and admiring.
That Dutch bloke must have stashed a ship somewhere. How do you figure he managed?
Indeed. Tolvern rubbed her thumb over the handle of her mug.
How did they get the ship in place? How did they escape from the buzzards? All sorts of questions.
However they did it, they ain't taking chances now. They're hauling their asses out of here.
2 men operating a ship alone. It was possible, Tolvern supposed. At least for now. They'd need someone to run some calculations if they ever wanted to jump, unless one of the pair had been a pilot at some point. The mystery was driving her crazy. Where were those two headed?
Pilot, is there a jump point out there, or are they flying blind?
That is difficult to ascertain,
Nib Pim said.
We do not have a good chart for this system. Smythe has been scanning, but has not found anything in that direction.
Apex ships had begun to maneuver again, and this grabbed Tolvern's attention.
All right, Smythe, show me the bad news.
He changed the view screen. More Apex ships had jumped into the kettle system. 3 more hunter-killer packs, which felt like overkill, but couldn't make the odds much worse than they already were, and, more significantly, a 2nd harvester ship. This one had a different shape. It was still larger than any of its accompanying vessels, but was long and lean, with a bulbous front and a long, slender rear. It reminded her of a sperm whale, mostly head, tapering off at the tail.
That makes 2 harvester ships, she said. Why?
The buzzards are anxious, Cap said. Want to make sure the job gets done.
There's only 1 harvester ship in orbit around Singapore, Tolvern replied. The refugees have all agreed on that much. Anything from 1/3 to 1/2 of the population survived the bombardment. That's 30 to 50 million people for 1 ship. We have less than 100 on Blackbeard, and another 500 on Sentinel 3. That doesn't require 2 ships.
What about Drake and his people?
Come on, Cap. Throw in Drake's entire fleet, and we're still only talking about a few thousand. Plus the marines in stasis, I suppose. Still, one harvester ship could process us all.
That's not what I mean, Cap said. I mean, there's two of us now, and two of them. Now we're even.
It was a vague explanation that sounded more like choosing teams in a playground game than anything to do with wartime contingencies. And the newly arriving buzzards were flying toward the kettle, not trying to intercept Admiral Drake's forces. But Cap had got Tolvern thinking. What about the disarray in the Apex forces during the earlier battle? Blackbeard and her crew would be dead if not for that. Could this be about an internal struggle among the buzzards? Different forces all hoping to win the battle for their own personal glory.
Let's hope it doesn't play out like that, Tolvern decided at last. Let's hope they team up and try to take us out.
What do you mean? Cap asked. How is that going to help?
Tolvern turned to Smythe.
How long until the new ships reach us?
He and Lomelie were scanning the closer, more menacing force, and it took the tech officers a moment to come up with the answer.
Roughly 20 hours at current speed, maybe a little less.
Smythe punched at the console.
They came through a closer jump point, it looks like.
20 hours?
Tolvern gave Cap a half-smile.
So if the first fleet waits around, that buys us time.
Cap grunted. Only about half what we need until Drake shows up.
I'll take 20 now, and figure out how to earn 20 more when they show up. And engineering will be all too glad for another day to patch us up. Maybe I'll even get some sleep.
But that was not to be. A few minutes later, Smythe warned of movement in the closer enemy fleet. The main enemy force had been largely static for a few hours, milling about, positioning their ships near the moons, occasionally sending a small group to jump away and then jump back. But now, two of the hunter-killer packs were breaking off. They slid sideways toward one of the smaller moons, away from Blackbeard. But Tolvern suspected this was just positioning, and she was soon proven right. Four more packs accelerated in an apparently random direction, but Tolvern was sure they were preparing for a short-range jump. Worse still, the harvester ship was in motion. It had remained at a distance, content to observe in the earlier battle, but now came drifting in toward the planet and the icy ring where Blackbeard and Sentinel-3 remained in orbit.
"It's on an intercept course," Nib Pym announced.
"King's balls," Cap muttered.
"How long we got?"
"I am calculating that now."
"Smythe," Captain Tolvern said, "I sent you some codes when I came onto the bridge. Do you have them?"
"Yes, sir.
Tell the Sentinel we are moving out."
"Passing your orders to the gunnery, sir."
Moments later, the second and third missile launchers opened, but didn't fire. This was the signal to Commander Lee that she intended to move, and he was to follow. Barker called at once from the gunnery, even as the missile launchers were still opening.
"Can you buy me some time?"
"How much and why?" Tolvern asked.
30 minutes, 40 tops. We're almost done hammering the damaged aft shields back into place. Trust me, you want that done."
She glanced at the viewscreen. Possibly. The harvester ship was accelerating slowly, the other enemy craft still jostling. None of the lances had jumped. There might even be a full hour before battle if the cruiser and battle station maintain their position, and Tolvern could sure use the aft shields before she took more fire. Unfortunately, that would mean abandoning her latest plan.
"Keep your men working," she said. "But we're moving out."
"Captain, listen to me. We need those shields. That's the difference between absorbing 20 seconds of enemy fire and us all dying after 2. As soon as we go into battle..."
"As soon as we do, we're dead anyway. I don't intend to fight, not this time."
She cut the channel and ordered Nib Pym to take them right at the harvester ship. The instant Blackbeard moved out of orbit, the battle station materialized on the screens, its cloaks coming down. It swung out of the icy ring, several small engines flaring blue-green gases behind it. The station didn't have rapid acceleration and was moving at a crawl compared to the speed that Blackbeard could manage, even with only one engine. Tolvern let the station overtake them, then ordered the ship to take a position directly above and behind the battle station, like a remora following a shark.
"Let's see what the buzzards think of this."
The harvester ship kept coming toward them, and though both sides were moving slowly, the distance closed quickly. The bridge fell silent as they waited to see what would happen. There were so many enemies. No way to defeat them all. Not without the miracle of the Illuminon battery.
"We're coming in range," Cap said.
Tolvern hesitated. Lomelie, activate the defense grid computer. Looks like we're fighting after all. And get Barker on the comm, I need to talk to him.
Yes, sir, the young woman said, her tone grim. Smythe, ready the next signal for our friends, Tolvern said.
But Smythe cried out at that same moment.
It's slowing down!
It was true. The harvester ship had reversed its engines. The lances ahead of her broke off and swung wide into an unmistakably defensive posture.
Keep going, Tolvern said. We can't look hesitant, or they'll know it's a bluff. We have to hope they withdraw.
The harvester ship was indeed falling back, retreating with its forces toward the small moon. At last, Tolvern had her excuse to break off the charge, no longer worried they'd suspect her of bluffing. After all, the human forces might be confident enough in open battle, but chasing an enemy around a moon and falling into a potential ambush was another matter. She breathed a sigh of relief.
Thank God they bought it. Send Lee another signal. We're falling back to the ring.
That didn't buy us much time, Cap said a few minutes later, after the message had been sent.
An hour tops if they move again.
Barker was only asking for 30 minutes. He's got to be happy about getting the aft shield fixed. Well, patched up a little anyway.
But what do we do next? Cap asked.
Any time they come after us, we'll rush out to challenge them.
Make it look like we're spoiling for a fight now that we've seen how the Illuminon battery works against their forces.
The Illuminon battery that doesn't work, you mean? Smythe said. He and Lomelie were back to working together at the tech console.
We know that they don't. Anyway, we'll keep bluffing them if we need to. But what I'm hoping they decide is that it's prudent to wait for reinforcements. That buys us 20 hours.
And another 20 until Dreadnought comes to pull our stones out of the fire, Cap said. All we've done is double the number of ships against us. Our goose is cooked either way.
Maybe not fully cooked, Tolvern said, but I'll admit to a strong aroma of burning feathers.
I'm open to suggestions. Anyone?
When there was no answer, she continued. So we bluff. We buy as much time as we can, and then we fight when the enemy calls us out. It's our best shot.
Two of the hunter-killer packs jumped, and they braced themselves for a sudden fight, but the ships reappeared farther out, near several lances that had been drifting aimlessly since the harvester ship retreated. The two clusters of ships flew across each other's paths in seemingly random patterns, back and forth, like two flocks of birds crisscrossing in flight.
What are they up to now? Tolvern asked.
Nobody had an answer or even a guess. It was buying them more time, though, so she wasn't about to complain. Let the buzzards keep swooping past each other as long as they wanted. The lances kept passing closer and closer, until at range, it looked like they were all right on top of each other every time they passed. Sometimes one of them darted in as if to ram the opposing ship, only to dart away at the last moment. And then two ships coming at each other both broke in the same direction. One was a lance, the other a larger spear. The spear took a glancing blow off starboard, and gas and debris vented into space. The smaller lance crumpled on impact. It spun away, explosions blasting holes in its side. Moments later, it detonated. Hard to say which ship had been at fault, but it seemed as though the lance had hesitated a moment too long before swerving. The harvester ship had approached the action during the mysterious darting back and forth, not participating but observing. Now, however, it rumbled into the action. The other ships scattered. Some vanished entirely, jumping clear and reappearing a million miles out. The wounded spear limped off, picking up speed, but the harvester ship overtook it before it could escape. It launched tentacle-like tethers, hooked the spear, and dragged it in. The smaller ship tried to break free, but failed. A gaping hole opened in the rear of the harvester ship, and it stuffed the spear into its maw before closing again.
I don't know what just happened, Tolvern said, but whoever was on that spear is in for a rough time of it.
Good, Cap said. Let the buzzards eat each other. You think they'll start up that strutting again? Maybe we can get rid of a few more of them. By now, Sentinel 3 had inserted itself back into the ice ring. Cloaked once more, it would slide slowly in one direction or another along the ring in an attempt to conceal itself. Tolvern ordered Blackbeard closer to the planet. The lances and spears that had participated in the bizarre swooping movements milled about for a few minutes, but soon rearranged themselves into packs. The harvester ship faced them. The mouth of the thing opened again, and out came a spear. It flew away smartly and took position at the head of the hunter-killer pack that had been lacking a command ship. Tolvern was confused. Was the whole thing a repair job, and the harvester ship had slapped a couple of patches on and sent the spear out again? How had they done it so fast? And why had the spear tried to escape?
"It's a different ship that came out," Smythe said. "Longer and narrower. Different engines."
He brought it up on the viewscreen, but Tolvern couldn't see a difference.
"I'll take your word for it. So it seems the harvester carries a spare command ship or two."
"That spear was running for its life," Cap said. "Didn't want to be brought in. Bet they're all dead."
"Whatever happened, they're organized now," Tolvern said, "and moving. They seem to have got whatever it was out of their system. Smythe, get ready to signal the sentinel to move again."
"The buzzards are going to be on to us," Smythe said. "They'll see the same missile bays open, the same response from the battle station, and they'll know what it means."
Tolvern had thought of that already, but she had a bigger concern.
"And it gives away other signals, too. They'll realize we're using physical cues for all of our communications. I'd rather have them thinking we had some secret new high-tech system in place that they can't crack. Well, there's nothing to be done for it."
But that didn't mean she'd tip her hand too quickly. Better to wait until the last minute, before giving orders to engage. What about that bizarre behavior, all the swooping and darting around? What if it meant something, like a difference of opinion? One side wanted to attack at once, the other to wait for reinforcements. They'd played a game of outer space chicken until the action got out of hand. Now they were pissed off and ready to finish off the humans. At first it looked like Apex would simply repeat their charge toward the kettle, but once the entire enemy fleet was in motion, they swung around and moved away from the planet.
"The buzzards are retreating," Cap said.
No, not retreating, not for good. Plotting a course that would unite them with the new Apex forces to form a super fleet comprised of two harvester ships and dozens of lances and spears. But that gave them the 20 hours of breathing room she'd been craving. Well, 18 hours at this point, but she'd take it. And sleep. God, I could use some rest. But the news soon proved even better than that. What seemed at first like a direct flight from the kettle to rendezvous with the newcomers soon became something else. The closer fleet flew instead toward a blue-green gas giant about half the size of the kettle. This was roughly in the direction of the second Apex force, but not exactly. A few minutes after that, the newcomers farther out began to decelerate. 18 hours was recalculated as 22, then 31, then 50. Were they possibly coming to a complete stop? No, they were turning around. By the time Tolvern stumbled off the bridge toward her cabin, her adrenaline circling the drain, it seemed as though the enemy had called off the entire attack. Both alien fleets were flying away, possibly even jumping out of the system. It can't be that easy, can it?
Chapter 7. Drake waited outside the airlocks for the visitors to emerge from the docking bay. Admiral Malthorn had never waited here for his guests. He'd made them trudge down the hallway, take the lift up, and approach him on the bridge, where he sat like an emperor on his throne. The battleship still carried Malthorn's touches, even down here. No cheap plastic runners along the walls, no simple recessed lights, but delicate fixtures lined with bronze. The rampant lions on the airlock doors weren't molded plastic, they were carved wood and gilded. There had once been an eagle claw on a shield placed below the lions, but Drake had ordered it cut off. The arrogance of it took Drake's breath away. The claw and shield was Malthorn's family crest, and after King Bartholomew's death during the atomic bombardment of Yorktown, the Admiral had seized the throne and gone about fixing that ugly crest to everything he touched, a usurper trying to prove his legitimacy. Well, the Admiral was dead now, executed for high treason. Whenever Drake felt too young, too inexperienced, too inadequate, he thought about Lord Malthorn's treachery, and he didn't worry quite as much about his competence. He didn't feel nervous about his visitors until Manx told him through the comm that they'd been snared and brought inside. Suddenly he felt the urge to retire to his chambers, pour a snifter of brandy, and settle his nerves. The door swung open, and there she was, Captain Jess Tolvern, looking trim and alert. Her eyes were lively and intelligent, her mouth in a half-smile that was almost mocking. He'd known her most of his life since he would ride to her house as a young man, asking for her father, the steward of the estate. But things were different now. He wanted to take her slender, girlish figure in his arms. Tolvern had long been a friend and confidant, but nothing had been the same since that moment between them at the end of the war. Cap had passed Drake a bit of winking gossip, and suddenly his views of Tolvern had shifted wildly, like an arrow aimed at one target that hits another. Tolvern was, apparently, in love with him, and he discovered somewhat shocked. He harbored romantic feelings for her in turn. It had not been the time or the place to move on those feelings, but they were acknowledged on both sides. Now, staring at her lovely face for the first time in months, he wondered, did she still feel that way? She was now captain of his old starship and doing a damn fine job at it, too. Ambition had probably swept away foolish romantic notions. There was a wiry, middle-aged man with her. Time and genetic drift had changed the look somewhat, but the man, with his slightly angled eyes and low, drooping eyelids, was clearly a descendant of the Chinese people from old Earth. A year ago, his appearance would have looked strange to Drake, but not anymore.
"This is John Lee of the Singapore Imperium," Tolvern said, "commander of Sentinel-3 and our new ally."
"And how have you been communicating?" Drake asked her. He meant what human language, not how they'd done so without radio or subspace, although these questions had also occurred to him. Simple language concerns were the big question. The Singaporean refugees he'd met spoke some greatly altered dialect of Chinese, and the fleet had communicated with them through a combination of Pidgin Dutch and translation software that allowed written Chinese, which could still be read by the refugees.
"I'm pleased to meet you, sir," Lee said in perfect English. "Captain Tolvern has told me all about you."
Drake's eyes widened in surprise.
"You speak English? And with an Auckland accent, by God."
"I didn't learn it the hard way, through study and practice. A technological cheat, you could say."
"Our new friends have all sorts of tricks they're willing to teach us," Tolvern said. "You probably saw some of them from a distance."
"I'd love to take a closer look," he said. "Use some of your technology to defeat Apex."
"Everything we have is yours," Lee said. "With conditions, of course."
Drake gave the man a wary look, then glanced at Tolvern, who raised an eyebrow. Conditions. Albion didn't share its technology, as a general rule. Even giving the Hroom the sugar antidote to save their crippled civilization had come with a good deal of struggle and soul-searching. What exactly did Lee want? Drake couldn't give them weapon systems. Those invariably found their way into unfriendly hands, usually via greedy Ladinos or New Dutch, although there was no shortage of unscrupulous merchants within the Albion Kingdom itself. And to what purpose would Lee want them? The Singaporeans were a dying remnant, literally being consumed by their enemy. He was inclined to say no, but what about that plasma weapon? Drake was itching to get his hands on it. And there was also that trick that had disabled the enemy vessels long enough for Blackbeard and the station to pick them off one by one. What the devil was that, and how could he put it to use? Drake would bend the rules if it meant gaining an advantage against the Buzzards. But this was not the time or place to negotiate.
"Let's go to the bridge," he said. "We'll talk there."
He carefully watched Lee's expression as they took the lift and made their way down the corridor past smartly dressed Navy officers and enlisted personnel. The fleet had been picking its way carefully through the outer systems for months, and had yet to get caught in the sort of fight that had destroyed HMS Swift and left HMS Blackbeard battered. His forces could use a good battle, to be honest,
The fleet wasn't for decorative purposes, after all. But he'd needed to get out here closer to the enemy. In any event, he could tell from the way Lee was looking about that the Navy was making a good impression so far. They came onto the bridge, and Lee's eyes widened, even as Tolvern scowled, as she took in the remnants of Lord Malthorn's gold-plated decorating style. The crew on the bridge stared at the Singaporean commander with open curiosity. Lee stepped in front of the viewscreen and gaped. Sentinel 3 loomed across the screen, with the gas giant behind it. Blackbeard lay tethered to the side, chewed up in the fighting, but probably in better shape than it had been a few days earlier. Tolvern would have used any break in the action to complete emergency repairs. "I haven't seen the station from this angle for 11 years, Lee said. "It seems so fragile from here." Drake wouldn't have put it in those terms. It may not look as secure as one of the orbital fortresses Albion put into orbit around its planets, dug deep into captured asteroids, but the battle station bristled with weapons. And it was a massive thing, the diameter as wide as HMS Dreadnought was long. Blackbeard looked like a toy in comparison.
"Lieutenant Manx," Drake told his first mate, "show our guest the firepower of this fleet."
Manx led Lee to the defense grid computer, where he brought up schematics of the cannons, torpedo tubes, and missile batteries. Manx also showed Lee the other ships of the fleet, telling a little bit of their capabilities and weaknesses. Lee asked sharp questions. He wondered why there were no carrier-type craft. The role of small fighting craft was carried out in the Royal Navy by torpedo boats, Manx explained, which were admittedly not ideal for fighting Apex. They were ships meant to stop commerce raiders, but especially to mob and destroy Hroom sloops of war.
"In other words, your forces are designed to fight a different enemy than the one you now face," Lee said.
"We've made adjustments," Manx said stiffly, "but there's more to be done, admittedly."
Drake led Tolvern out of earshot.
"Lee seems competent enough. He's asking good questions."
"He is a smart man. That's not his weakness. It's command, or lack of it. He struggled to hold his crew together. 11 years of isolation did a number on him, on them all. Some of them went nuts."
"What exactly do you mean by nuts?"
"I mean behavior that cannot be interpreted as anything other than madness."
Tolvern laid out her initial encounter with the Sentinel battle station. Her arrival had set off a mutiny of those who wanted to keep the station hidden and would destroy Blackbeard to do it. They'd planned to kill some of Blackbeard's crew and force the rest into service. Even the arrival of the enemy fleet hadn't changed the mutineers' opinions. If anything, it had hardened their fanaticism. Drake stopped her when she got to the part about Megat and Dijkstra escaping. The Dutch pilot ran off with the leader of the mutiny. "That's disturbing."
"I know, sir. I wish I'd blasted them out of the sky when I had the chance, but I can't imagine they'll do us any harm now."
Drake wasn't so sure of that. He told her to go on. Tolvern told him about the strange maneuvering and apparent squabbling among the Apex ships, which was something Drake's fleet had also noticed. Sentinel 3 had noted it as well. Tolvern and Lee had discussed it after she docked her ship to the battle station for repairs. Drake and Tolvern walked toward the defense grid computer, where Lee and Manx continued their discussion.
"Can I get a look at the Hroom ships?" Lee asked.
Manx had been switching the view on the main screen to show the various warships, and now he focused on the 6 mottled green sloops of war. Mos Driz kept his forces aloof and insisted that if and when the time came to fight, he would follow his own counsel. Frustrating. The Hroom were capable fighters, but their tactics would be terrible. Having them fight on their own was like having a finely made sword that had lost its edge. Lee asked Manx a few questions about the Hroom's capabilities, then turned to Admiral Drake.
"It's an impressive fleet from top to bottom," he said. "I wish we'd had Albion on our side 12 years ago. The Hroom, too."
"Albion and the Empire were at each other's throat 12 years ago," Drake said. "We're still at each other's throat, depending on which faction you're talking about."
"The Hroom are prickly. We never managed to enlist their help either."
"They're in serious trouble now. Not much choice if they don't want to be wiped out."
Drake shook his head.
But if we ever do pull out of this, I expect we'll be back to fighting each other.
At least it's possible to work with the Hroom, Lee said. They may not be human, but they're close enough to understand.
That's what I always thought, too, Tolvern said.
Tell me about this wonder tech you've got, Drake said. He thought Lee might balk, force the conditions he'd bluntly mentioned outside the docking bay before speaking a word. But he told about the battle station's cloaking abilities, the impressive plasma ejector, and finally, the Illuminon battery. Drake had watched the enemy ships become completely disabled, but he'd had no idea how it had been done. The answer was not what he'd expected.
So you defeated them with gravity?
Yes, essentially artificial gravity channeled from the kettle. The gas giant, I mean. Singapore had the technology already. We used it in mining operations, in our own asteroid belt. It was more useful for larger operations than a typical anti-grav and inertia engine system. And then once, when we caught one of the birds alive...
You caught one? Tolvern said sharply.
It didn't live long. Some of that was the gravity. We suffocated it without knowing. Our scientists believe their homeworld is a low-gravity planet with roughly 0.5 standard Gs. That explains how they're human-sized but can still fly. Singapore is within the normal range of human habitable planets, 1.1 Gs, and we keep our ships and stations calibrated to that level. The birds struggle in that gravity, crank it up even more, and they collapse. They can't fly their ships. Humans, on the other hand, can handle a few extra gravities, no problem.
Assuming you don't mind the blood draining from your head, Tolvern said.
It's an ingenious idea, Drake said. We don't have the tech, though, even if we'd thought of it ourselves.
Other officers had gathered around Commander Lee while he was talking, curious as to what the man had to say. Drake hadn't begrudged them the chance to eavesdrop, but now he needed privacy.
Will you join me in the war room, Commander, Captain?
Tolvern and Lee followed him. Once inside the war room, Lee looked around, taking in the ostentatious decorating style of Admiral Malthorn. He walked to the oak bookshelf and pulled off a volume, and his eyes widened.
The Art of War, Sun Tzu. Old Earth civilization lives on, wherever her children take root, Drake said. He had been on the verge of disavowing the decorating style. But now he thought better of it. Lee was obviously impressed.
Drake took a seat at one end of the table and gestured for the other two to take their seats on either side of him, Tolvern to his right and Lee to his left.
We have taken in thousands of refugees from your world, Drake said, and we have no interest in this sector except to fight Apex as far from home as possible. No designs on your resources, no desire to oppress your people or interfere in any way. We are not and never will be enemies. But I will be blunt, Commander. We need your technology. Whatever you share will never be used against you.
Lee tented his hands and looked at the viewscreen on the table, which showed HMS Repulse, the powerful aggressor-class cruiser that would be a battle axe in Drake's hand in the upcoming fight.
Our tech is hard-earned, foolish to hand it over for nothing, and risky.
Maybe so, Tolvern said. But in a crisis like this, all of us must take risks.
Drake hid a frown. He didn't like the all part of that statement. He wished he'd briefed her on his strategy before they'd entered the war room. He couldn't afford to give over his own military secrets, not because he was worried about how Lee would use them, but because the Singaporean civilization was already destroyed. Anything he handed over could make its way into the enemy's hands. Lee nodded at Repulse.
It's an impressive ship, Admiral, like Captain Tolvern's, only in somewhat better condition.
Blackbeard was in fighting trim when I handed her over, Drake said with a smile.
I'm afraid Captain Tolvern doesn't always treat our possessions with the respect they deserve.
He said it gently, but Tolvern winced. There was no need to blame herself. A mission with two ships through enemy territory was meant to stir up trouble, and had.
On the other hand, he added, trying to deflect her guilt. I seem to remember leaving my ship rather battered on an occasion or two. Remember the shape we were in after the first battle of Barca?
It's worse now, believe me, she said. I'll be raiding your armory and probably hiding in your shadow as we ship out.
Drake wasn't going to address that yet. Instead, he said,
I wish we knew where Dijkstra and Megard were headed. Our charts of this sector are practically non-existent.
I can help with that, Lee said. He brought out his computer, and after fiddling around for a few minutes, got it to interface with Dreadnought's computers. A complex web of jump points and star systems mapped itself out in 3D above the war room table. Their position was marked blue. Good charts were as much a state secret as the engineering of weapon systems. Jump points eroded or migrated over time, and what formerly seemed safe might take you into hostile territory or land you within the corona of a star. That Lee was willing to share such detailed information suggested the extent of his cooperation.
We only had 2 jump points marked when we came in, Tolvern said. But these charts are crowded with them.
The system is generally unstable. Most of these jump points carry some risk. Green jumps are reliable. Use the yellow ones with caution. I would advise against the 2 red jump points. Still, Drake said, with so much wormhole activity, the kettle system looks to me like a critical choke point. Why aren't you trying to control access in and out? Lee gave a bitter laugh. Why do you think we built Sentinel 3? A single battle station, no matter how powerful, is hardly sufficient. What about settlements? Naval depots?
We had 4 mining colonies and 2 naval bases, Lee said. All wiped out in the war. The system has been a desert since then. Only the Sentinel quietly waiting. The Hrum didn't come. Singapore sent no ships, and Apex was absent until now.
Drake wanted to call in his pilot and sub-pilot to take a closer look at the charts, but for now an overview would be enough. He peered closer. What about this jump point here? He said, pointing at one of the green dots on the map. That's where the bigger Apex force disappeared.
That takes you deeper into the Dragon Quadrant, Lee said. Toward my home world, in fact.
Toward what was once my home world, and is now an abattoir. Lee didn't actually say that last part, but the dark look that flashed over his face was clear enough.
I see, Drake said.
He took another look at the map.
We came from here. Another jump back in that direction, and you're in Hrum territory. What about this one?
Drake pointed to a jump point well placed among the inner worlds, this one yellow.
That leads toward what we call the Snake Quadrant, a big mass of stars with no known jump points. We discussed taking the entire population, or as much as could be evacuated, and fleeing Apex if we could find a way in. We found nothing. You can bump around the edges, but you won't get in.
Drake exchanged a glance with Tolvern. Was the Snake Quadrant the same thing Albion called the Omega Cluster? They knew someone who claimed she'd found a way to jump in, and was leading a one-way mission to colonize it. Lee pointed to another jump point, this one situated near the farthest gas giant in the system.
This also takes you to the Hrum worlds, but more importantly it's where Megart and Dijkstra fled.
Ah, Tolvern said, leaning forward in her chair. Megart might have known about the jump point ahead of time, and apparently Dijkstra had a ship stashed nearby.
I cannot possibly see how, Lee said. There have been no visitors to this system, no invaders. Dijkstra would have had to drop a ship on one of the moons 12 years ago, and that's impossible. How would we have known?
More likely he slipped in under your instruments sometime recently, Drake said. It's a small ship.
Impossible, Lee said.
With all respect, Admiral, Tolvern said, I agree with Commander Lee. Dijkstra didn't know where the Singaporean base was hidden. We just broadcast in and waited for an answer. There's no way the Dutchman planned his escape. It must have been spontaneous.
So, what happened between when the fugitives launched their pod and when they got their hands on a ship? Drake asked.
A lance was trying to pick up the pod, she said, but we lost track in the chaos of battle and didn't see how it ended.
We didn't even see that much, Lee said. Too many other things going on. And we were too far away to pick up that level of detail, Drake said. So I guess none of us know for sure. But I'm suspicious that an escape pod somehow escaped Apex.
That's what I'm thinking too, Tolvern said. The buzzards must have helped them. They scooped up the pod, gave Dijkstra and Megart a captured ship, and sent them off toward the jump point. But why?
I don't believe it, Lee said. Megat is a fanatic, but he hates the birds as much as anyone. I don't know this other man, this Dijkstra, but surely he wouldn't let himself be willingly taken onto an Apex ship. What human would?
Tolvern looked thoughtful. Maybe they didn't have a choice. Maybe they're being forced to obey the enemy.
You don't know Megat like I do. There is no possible blackmail or threat that would force him to help the birds.
Drake tapped at his console to manipulate Lee's chart of the kettle system, and the jump point taken by the two runaways activated a link to another chart. This showed an unfamiliar collection of small rocky planets circling a red dwarf. There was only one other jump point visible, and it led to yet another system. This third system showed a medium-sized yellow star with two rocky planets in the habitable zone, and a single massive gas giant that was nearly large enough to be a star in its own right, a so-called brown dwarf. There were no other jump points marked, only the entry.
"Looks like they've flown into a cul-de-sac," Drake said. "Is that right?"
"You are looking at an incomplete chart," Lee said. "Singapore never explored that system, just jumped in long enough to scan the big objects. It's Empire territory, and a Hume fleet chased us out."
Drake studied the array of his own planets more carefully, then compared it to his own database. The computer gave a match.
"I know this system," he said. "It's Hume territory, all right. The hostile faction."
He pointed to a spot near the outermost of the rocky worlds.
"There's a jump point somewhere in orbit around here, if I remember right. General Mos Driz would know exactly where. Another jump or two and you can get to a smaller dino colony on Sambarandon. They've been taking Singaporean refugees. I'll bet that's where the fugitives are headed. Some of our old friends we knew on San Pablo are there, too."
He turned to Tolvern.
"That's where Rodriguez has set up his new yards."
"I've heard of Sambarandon," Tolvern said. "A watery world. That's about all I know. Why would Megat and Dijkstra go there? Just to hide as far from civilization as possible?"
Drake gave it some thought.
"You can jump straight from Sambarandon toward the frontier, and from there, you can reach Albion space easily enough. So it's not as far from civilization as it looks, and that worries me."
"There are Hume on Sambarandon, right?" Tolvern said. "Talk to the general. He could send a message and have Dijkstra and Megat intercept it."
"Not the right kind of Hume," Drake said. "If I remember correctly, this system is neutral in the Civil War. They won't be helping Mos Driz."
He gave Tolvern a thoughtful look.
"Rodriguez runs a good operation. Wouldn't be the first time we used his yards."
"Oh, no, you don't. I'm not going after them."
"You're in no shape to carry on the fight. Rodriguez can patch you up. And I want those fugitives."
"Admiral, please."
Drake nodded, more decided now.
"I'm giving you a second plasma engine and sending you back for full-scale repairs."
"And what are you going to do when I've left?"
"I'm still figuring that part out," Drake admitted. "Most likely try to pick a fight with the enemy."
"Then you can't afford to send me away. You're way out here. No way to supply yourself. You need all the fire support you can get. Blackbeard's guns..."
"Blackbeard is a liability, Tolvern, not an asset. I can cobble you a quick engine repair, but you'd still be the slowest ship in my fleet. I can't be waiting around for you, can't be sending you behind the lines whenever the enemy appears. You are no help to me until you've seen the yards."
Tolvern thrust her chin out and crossed her arms.
"Hardly unprecedented. Happens every time someone takes damage. When is the last time you went into battle with every ship in perfect shape?"
Drake hardened his voice.
"Tolvern, you will take HMS Blackbeard to Sambarandon for repairs. While there, you will search for Dijkstra and Megat and bring them into custody. Are we understood?"
The fight went out of her expression, though her tone remained grudging.
"Yes, Admiral, as you command."
"Good, we'll be docked here for a few days while we get that new engine installed, and we can figure out how to get you safely through. The General might have some ideas. Meanwhile, Commander Lee," Drake added, "I want to see these weapon systems you've devised, and if there's any way we can put them to immediate use..."
Lee cleared his throat.
"Yes, well, there's still the matter of securing our cooperation." "Oh, yes."
Drake had forgotten all about Lee's conditional offer for assistance.
"Your so-called conditions. I will aid you in any way possible, of course. But first, you will use your fleet to liberate Singapore.
and save it from extermination. Chapter 8 A few hours later, Tolvern was on Blackbeard, together with Admiral Drake, who'd come back with her in the pod. Blackbeard had just snagged a second away pod, and Tolvern and Drake waited in the engineering bay while it was hauled in. The pod popped open, and a long, slender figure unfolded himself. Drake leaned over and whispered in Tolvern's ear, "He's in a foul mood. Give him plenty of space." One look at Moe's Driz as he stomped toward them, and she wondered why Drake felt he needed to be explicit. The Hroom General muttered to himself in a series of whistles, squeaks, and grunts that passed for Hroom language, and his long limbs flailed as he walked, making it dangerous for anyone who stood too close. The bay was filled with engineers and bosuns who had a plasma engine disassembled on the floor and hanging from chains. The heat shields were in place, but the rest of it was a mess of parts, large and small. This spare engine, such as it was, had come from a missile frigate in Drake's fleet that had kept overheating every time it accelerated for a jump. Drake had stripped it out and replaced it with a spare, and now it was Tolvern's replacement. Assuming they could get it operational again. Several of Lee's technicians had come over to assist in the repair, and they stared as Moe's Driz approached Tolvern and Drake. The general seemed to feel their gaze and turned to glare.
"He's a Hroom," Barker growled nearby. "Not a buzzard. He's not going to eat you for lunch."
The general looked down on the chief engineer.
"I would not be so confident about that, human," Barker grunted.
"And what's that supposed to mean?"
"Never mind, Barker," Tolvern said. "Keep to your work."
Moe's Driz fixed his gaze on Tolvern, his entire nose flattening against his face as he breathed heavily. He loomed above her, well over 7 feet tall, his mottled pink skin flushed with every breath.
"We are honored by your visit, General," Tolvern said, "but a warning would have been nice."
"So you need an escort through the Getzer system. Is that accurate?"
"That was the Admiral's decision, not mine. If you have an issue with the instructions,"
she was careful not to say orders,
"then you'll need to talk to Drake, not me."
Moe's Driz glanced sideways at Drake, who didn't speak, only gave a slight nod.
"And once that is accomplished, I am to take position near the kettle and wait for the Albion fleet to return," Moe's Driz continued. "If Apex approaches, I am to sacrifice my fleet to protect the Sentinel base."
"Again, General," Tolvern said, "these are not my decisions."
"You humans stand in solidarity," he said bitterly. "There are harvester ships in Hroom territory, hovering uncontested above our planets. Who worries about them? They've killed millions already, laid waste to several systems. No human will do a thing to help us. But Albion will fly to the other side of the sector to rescue a human colony at risk."
"We need this battle station, General. They will only share their charts and technology if we agree to drive off the buzzards."
"Oh, you need it, do you? If it were a Hroom base, you would simply take it. And then you would probably sell us into slavery as our reward."
Drake had been silent during all of this, but now he seemed unable to hold his tongue. It was largely because of his actions that Hroom slavery had been abolished.
"That is a dark insult, General," he said. "We are not slavers, as well you know."
"You would still take what you want and wear it a Hroom base."
"Go ahead, then," Tolvern said. "Take the technology yourself. Sentinel 3 drove off a huge fleet of Apex ships, but I'm sure your 6 sloops of war can manage."
The general stared back. Then he turned on his heels and walked away from the work on the plasma engine. There was visible relief among the Singaporean workers, and a few grunts from the Blackbeard engineers. Tolvern and Drake followed. Tolvern spoke at his back.
"We're negotiating with the Singaporeans because we have to."
"So you claim."
"It may not be apparent," Drake said, "but Captain Tolvern is against the plan."
Moe's Driz turned.
"Against it in what way?"
"Tolvern doesn't want to go to Samborondon. She wants to stay in the fight. I want her to stay in the fight, too. But her ship is no good to me now, and I won't sacrifice her. I won't sacrifice you, either."
"If you want the Hroom as an ally," Mosdris said. You need to defend our territory too. And it isn't just decent behavior, it is a wise strategy as well. Those harvester ships are feeding on us, but they won't stop there. They will multiply in number and carve a path right through the Empire, and then they'll be on your doorstep too.
They're already on our doorstep, Tolvern said. We've been attacked in Albion space.
Nibaldat probed. Nothing like the wholesale slaughter we're suffering. They'll soon be feeding on us like scavengers on a corpse. Then it will be your turn.
You have a point, Drake said. It helps us if the room stays strong enough to fight. That's one reason I turned over the sugar antidote.
Mose Dries looked solemn at this. His pale complexion showed that he'd continued as an eater, and Tolvern guessed that the small satchel at his waist carried packages of sugar. The general somehow maintained enough discipline to keep from gobbling so much of the white stuff that he suffered swoons in the middle of combat, but he didn't have enough to rid himself of the addiction entirely by taking the cure.
I need more than that, he said at last. I need you to fight for me. You have made a promise to this base commander. You will attack the harvester ship feeding on Singapore, and he will give you technology. I will make a similar arrangement. That is, if you want my help in reaching Sambarondon.
I don't need you, Tolvern said. Blackbeard can get to Sambarondon without you.
Maybe you can, maybe you cannot. But I do not think your admiral will risk it.
Mos Driz held Drake, who suddenly looked uncomfortable, with his gaze.
He will not see his former ship destroyed.
Tolvern studied Drake to see if it was true. Her heart kicked at what she saw. It was worry, all right. But not just for the ship. He glanced at her, looked away, then glanced at her again. He was thinking about her, too.
Blackbeard is an important ship for the fleet, she said carefully. Admiral Drake has legitimate concerns. Some of his reasons may also be personal. Is that fair to say, Admiral?
I want my hands on those two traitors to the human race, Drake said, sidestepping the question. And if I can get my beloved ship out of harm's way at the same time, so much the better.
That pause and his emphasis seemed obvious to Tolvern, but the general would miss the misdirection, of course. Froome always did.
Tolvern needs to get through, and the two of you want my help, Mos Driz said. And I am telling you that my help comes with conditions.
Which are what? Drake asked.
There are 5 harvester ships in Froome territory. If you are willing to fight the one at Singapore, you can do the same for us.
To escort me through one potentially hostile system? Tolvern asked. I don't think so.
Plus you'll have continued use of my fleet. If not, I will take them elsewhere.
Tolvern scoffed.
Ha! Where?
She's right, Drake said. You've given me 6 sloops, which is a nice gesture. But it won't turn the tide of the war. Give me a real fleet, that's how you can help me. You do that. You put your ships under my command, and I'll take the fight back to Froome territory.
When the general didn't answer, Drake shook his head with visible anger.
There you have it. The rest of your forces are fighting the civil war, chasing each other instead of battling apex harvesters. You've repeatedly assured me you cannot offer more than 6 sloops. You also say you won't put yourself under my command. Very well. Help me escort Tolvern, and then you can be on your way. But don't cry to me in another year when there's nobody to stop the buzzards from feasting on your empire's rotten corpse.
Tolvern thought Drake was taking a big risk. Those 6 sloops might not be an entire fleet, but they might prove critical in the fight at Singapore. If the general flew off in a huff, Drake's forces would suffer a great loss.
Perhaps my original proposal was overly demanding, Mos Driz said at last. Let me propose a new agreement.
They'd come to a halt on the far end of the engineering bay, near stacks of Tyrellium armor shipped over from Dreadnought's hold. Enough to cobble together some second-rate shields until they could reach Sambarondon. The general put his enormous hand, with its long, thin fingers, on top of his head, in what was a curiously human-like gesture of thought. He was obviously still working it out.
I will escort Captain Tulvern to Sambarondon while you approach Singapore. Do not fight the enemy fleets on your own.
That is not your decision, Tulvern said. We don't command you and you don't command us.
Mos Driz continued as if he hadn't heard.
While Tulvern is repairing the ship and taking the fugitives into custody, I will collect more warships.
How many? Drake said, tone cautious and uncommitted.
I can promise 30 sloops.
Tulvern blinked.
That's a good fleet.
You have this many ships? Drake asked.
Yes, if I take everything under my command, and I do mean everything, I would have nothing to fight either Apex or the Hrum Death Cult. When I come back, we will fight to free Singapore from the Harvester ship. I will place myself and my ships under your command, Admiral.
And in return, Drake said, I will be obligated to return to Hrum territory as soon as Singapore is free?
Yes, you will use all of the resources of Albion to cleanse the Hrum worlds of Apex.
The Admiral looked thoughtful. You know this wasn't my plan. We discussed it last time you visited me on Dreadnought.
I know you want to hunt down the Apex homeworld and devastate it.
Tulvern drew a breath. Was that Drake's idea? It was audacious. But if what they knew about the buzzards was accurate, such a victory would win the war. A species that considered itself the Apex predator, feeding on the weak while it gained strength to attack the strong, would see a successful attack on its homeworld as the ultimate act of defiance. It would buy Albion respect, and with it time. And I still believe in that plan, Drake said, as you must know. Aren't you afraid that I'll make a promise and back out of it?
Of course I am worried. Humans are notorious liars. But you seem to be an honorable man, James Drake. We have worked together, and you have told me the truth several times, where lies would have served you better.
What do you think? Drake asked Tulvern. The easy answer was that she preferred the idea of thrashing Apex in their home system. The thought of flying Blackbeard among a powerful Albion force with 30 sloops of war to lend additional firepower was exhilarating. Throw in the Singaporean technology and they'd smash the buzzards once and for all. But if they first crushed Apex at Singapore and swept the buzzards from the Hrum systems, that would be a great victory too. Bring the Hrum civil war to an end, then send a massive fleet into enemy territory to finish the job. Forget buying a few generations. How about wiping the buzzards out altogether? The universe would not miss them.
How do we know you can deliver? She asked the general.
Hrum are poor liars, Mos Driz said. We rarely attempt it, and we succeed even more infrequently.
You are sincere. I can hear it in your tone. But I doubt you can deliver 30 sloops of war. You told us that your entire fleet only numbers 20 sloops.
18, but I believe I can get as many as 15 more, if I can convince a neutral faction to join me.
Tulvern laughed.
So you were lying.
The pink color faded from the general's face, leaving him almost white for a moment before his color returned.
I did not lie.
You made it sound like you had 30 sloops to turn over, when you've only got 18, and that includes the 6 we can already see.
I truly believe I can convince them to join us. I have a plan.
He sounded outraged and humiliated at the same time. Maybe it wasn't a lie, Drake said with a smile, but you were dissembling. I'll make a strategist out of you yet.
Mos Driz made a curious whistling sound.
Well, what about it?
If we make a deal, he said, how long would it take you to deliver on your end of the bargain?
I will be back in 3 weeks with your sloops. You and I must work out a way to learn of your whereabouts before I depart, or we will never be able to rendezvous.
Drake held out his hand, which his counterpart took, enveloping the Admiral's hand with his long fingers. General, if you can get me 30 sloops of war in 3 weeks, you've got a deal.
You can't be happy to lose the 6 sloops you already have, Tulvern told Drake after the general had returned to his command ship.
Not happy at all, but I'll manage.
HMS Dreadnought can hold her own.
So I have noticed. The Admiral and his captain walked the corridor toward the bridge. Most of the crew had served under Drake, and they greeted him warmly whenever they passed. Some forgot to salute, but clapped him on the shoulder and grinned, like they were old friends instead of admiral and subordinate.
"Besides, I'm not looking for a major naval engagement," Drake said when the two of them were free again. They stopped in front of the door to the bridge. "Not yet. I'm attempting to stay alive until the rest of you get back. Do just enough fighting to convince Lee that we're serious. I won't get into a full-fledged battle until I have all available forces. Or so I hope."
He hesitated.
"I sent a subspace to Captain McGowan, ordering his task force to this system."
"Then the enemy knows as well," she said.
"I know, and I hope it wasn't a mistake. Not because I'm worried about giving ourselves away. Apex already knows we're here, and soon they'll have a good idea that we intend to free Singapore. My worry is about McGowan. Have I set Peerless up for an ambush?"
"McGowan is clever," Tolvern said. "He'll know the risk and take precautions."
"McGowan's fleet is protecting the homeworlds. As soon as Peerless ships out, there will be nothing but a few orbital fortresses and a handful of destroyers standing in the way of a direct assault on Albion. We might win at Singapore, only to find the kingdom devastated and harvester ships feasting on the remnant." Drake led her onto the bridge.
Tolvern studied his face as they entered, and he settled into his old seat with a sigh. The others on the bridge sprang to their feet and surrounded him, chattering excitedly.
"It is very good to see you, Admiral," Smythe said, saluting. "Wait until you see the modifications to the defense computer. Lomir Lee is a genius."
"Oh, don't exaggerate," the young woman said, blushing.
"It's only..."
Someone else talked over her.
"Barker has a new torpedo array that... logical to arrange it that way because the buzzard's deficits in detection..."
Everyone was shouting at once, except for Nib Pym, and he was making an excited humming noise in the back of his throat that provided a soundtrack to the other noise.
"Can I get you anything, my lord?" Cap asked in a loud voice. "Tea, brandy, a pipe?"
"Some earplugs," Drake said.
"Everyone, quiet down, please," Tolvern said, embarrassed.
"Can someone tell me why my ship is in such rotten shape?" Drake asked when the noise had calmed down. "Did you sell the other engine for scrap, or did someone steal it when you weren't looking?"
Tolvern had already passed along the ship logs during her visit to Dreadnought, but he listened as Smythe and Cap took turns telling about the battle with Apex when they'd lost Swift, then chattered on about the various other scrapes and narrow escapes since they'd seen him last.
"Ah, so carelessness is the answer," Drake said. "I might have known the lot of you would come to no good."
His tone turned serious.
"I hate that we lost Swift. That was a blow."
"I don't know how they found us," Tolvern said. "Apex has poor detection technology, and we were traveling cloaked and in silence."
"Never discount the effect of luck in war," he said. "And most of the time it's bad luck and seems to help the enemy."
"It was bad luck for Swift, all right," Tolvern said. "She'd already survived one encounter with the buzzards. A second encounter was too much." "What about you?"